I'm Wes Shank, the host of the Missouri Wind and Solar Podcast, coming to you from our store in Seymour, Missouri. We hope you'll enjoy our discussions on renewable energy and the products that make that possible. Thank you for downloading our podcast, and we hope you'll subscribe. I've got David McDerris and Wyatt Harmon with me in here today. We've talked with both of them before on the podcast, and what we want to talk about today are blades. We want to talk about the different configurations, and I wanted these guys to teach me everything they know about blades in less than 30 minutes. Ready, set, go. The wonderful thing about being me is I'm clueless, so it helps all of our podcast listeners by virtue that I know nothing, so I get to ask all the dumb questions. I guess the first question that I got over to you guys before we get into probably some more of the technical stuff is just the simple question, why do we have some turbines with 3 blades and we got some turbines with 11 blades? What's the deal?
So yeah, look, in the high wind areas, you need fewer blades because you have more torque being made by the wind. So with that amount of torque that's being produced by the wind on a high wind, you need fewer blades. You'll achieve higher RPMs at that rate, which will produce more electricity. The more RPMs our turbine spin, the more electricity it produces. So, but if you get into a low wind zone, you need more blade surface area, meaning you need more blades.
So is it about the amount of wind that is touching?
So that way the low wind will have enough torque made possible by the more surface area made by having more blades. It'll cause you to have enough torque to actually produce voltage. You'll achieve lower RPMs with the higher blade count. So in doing that, you'll sacrifice a little bit of the top end performance of RPMGs, but you will be able to produce on that lower end scale. So there again, like low wind zones, you need more blades. High wind zones, you need fewer blades.
Okay, being the guy that doesn't know anything, wonderful moment. Why wouldn't I always just get our 11 blade and then just produce electricity like mad?
Because you won't achieve as much electricity off of an 11 blade in the same high wind area. Let's take 25 mile an hour for an instance. All of our turbines will produce at 25 mile an hour. A G5 blade, 3 blade will produce quite a bit more because it's achieving higher RPMs. It doesn't have that basically what I call a wind wall that it's coming up against. It doesn't have the force as it starts to drive. It only has X amount of force being pushed on it, but then it meets the same resistance on the other side after a period of time. So it can only spin so fast before it,
okay,
it basically walls out. It stops itself. It limits itself in essence. Whereas a 3-blade doesn't achieve, it achieves a lot higher RPM before it hits that same resistance factor.
But it's got to have enough wind.
But it has to
push
have enough
it to
wind
begin with.
Beginning.
So. Okay. All right. That makes sense to me. Okay.
Right.
When we look at the different blades that we offer, different materials, tell me about our different materials and what benefits are between. We've got a non-metal and a metal blade. Tell me the difference between the two. First off, what's the non-metal blade made of?
The non-metal blade is a nylon, fiberglass and carbon fiber mix. It's flexible and durable.
I know you guys weren't you and Chris talking about doing a run over it with a Heister video this week, were you?
Yeah. Well, actually we want to run over the aluminum blade to show how strong even those are. The aluminum material we use is ultra flexible and it's almost like spring steel. It flexes right back into shape. It doesn't develop the cracks like traditionally metallic blades can do. This material, it just doesn't do that.
Are there different applications for the two, or is it just straight up preference, or what's the dividing line? If I called you and said, which blade should I get? Is weight another factor? I mean, I would assume that there's some weight difference between the...
Yeah. Well, the metal blades don't have as good an airfoil ability as the injected blades.
Tell me what
that
is.
The composite blades.
What does that mean?
That means the form of them. The metal blade is very two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've looked at those. So it's it's basically a standard piece of metal across the the entire surface of the blade, whereas the form blade has a lot of curvature to it. That's is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. The metal blade, it is formed out of one sheet. It has curvature in both directions, from root to tip, but it can't easily or affordably be rolled around the backside to make a three-dimensional shape.
And that makes sense. But
yeah,
interestingly enough, now too, which I don't know, probably most of our people who would be listening to our podcast know, is that what's the correct phrase for our injected blade? Is it polycarbonate? Is that what we would?
Injected blade. It's a composite, really.
Okay.
So not polycarbonate. It's a nylon based material, which is very durable, very flex. You know, it can flex and not crack.
One of the interesting things about our nylon blade is that it's made here in Missouri.
Yeah.
And that's been a process. That blade's been engineered by us over, I guess, the last 10 years, being tweaked and put together.
Yeah, the G4 blade is a great all-around blade. You know, with the G5s, you can only put like 5 on there, and that's good, but it kind of limits you. The G4, you can put 11 and just, you know, be turning in 2 miles an hour, you know,
right,
getting it up to speed. So,
you know, one thing to note on that, the nylon based blade, it is nylon based, but I mean, it has carbon fiber, you know, composite. I mean, that's the composite part of it. We take different material, carbon fiber being one of them, which is highly durable. I mean, used in aero manufacturing to our blades, to gun cases. I mean, there's tons of things that are super high durable, that need real high durable strength, and carbon fiber is the answer to that. And so that's why we chose it as the material to be the one of the leading components in our blade, so you'd have that carbon fiber.
Yeah,
giving it super durability. I mean, you can flex these literally from tip to tip, and then let them go, and they'll come back to shape. You know, and not break. Whereas just a nylon blade or a plastic blade would snap off. You know, it would be a very dangerous situation, and so that allows for a lot of flex in a high wind zone. It allows for a lot of flex to flex back, but then we'll also, when the high wind stops, let it come back to true form. You know, and also carbon fiber. Sun doesn't affect carbon fiber like it will a nylon or a poly-based system. Sun will destroy a poly-based system. The UV rays will eventually destroy it, whereas carbon fiber, it cannot destroy that.
So what's the lifespan of one of our composite blades?
Truthfully, if you have no tower impacts, lifetime, you should never see it.
Now, I know that another thing that we always look at in the shipping, when we're shipping them out, as I wander around and get into people's way throughout the business day here, another thing that our customers should know as they buy blades, and we try to make sure that we mark on their orders, that sort of thing, is blade weight. And that's an important component of this too. Tell me a little bit about that. What are our tolerances? What are we looking at there?
The tolerance is 5 gram. We measure all of our blades. Every blade that goes into every box is measured, and they're going to be within a 5 gram tolerance of each other. 5 grams. I mean, you put that on a scale. If you don't have a gram scale, you could lift that 1,000 times a day, and you'll never notice the difference. So what that does is causes for good balance across the blade. If you take a extremely heavy blade to one side and a light blade on the other, well, that heavy blade is always trying to go to the bottom, so you're going to get that flat tire effect, that cha-chunk, cha-chunk, cha-chunk. Whereas if it's evenly balanced, you know, like a tire would be, you get the smooth, it's a smooth run. I mean, there's no trying to get over the next part, because if it's off balance like that, and it has to try to, it takes a lot of wind torque to try to get overcome that. You know, so in a light wind situation again, it's going to be that flat tire effect. It's the thump, the thump.
For my schoolhouse rock days, I think, I mean, you know, 5 grams is 5 paper clips.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing.
So little that you would, I mean, but you know, doing that, that just ensures that we have a good, properly balanced, you know, a good balanced hub and blade set that that we take the factor out of. We don't even worry about that in the troubleshooting guides now because that has been taken care of at the facility here. So,
looking at how does a blade strike impact a client? So let's say I've got just a regular 3-bladed wind turbine and I get some type of strike on it, whatever that may be. How much does that typically impact things? Is that something, if I know a strike happened, do I need to get new blades? Does it typically keep just rocking on? What?
Well, you definitely need to. I mean, if you know you have a tire strike, there's many things you need to do. For one, you need to check the blades. You need to check the hub assembly to make sure that it's still tight. That's one of the number one factors that somebody has problems with. The, you know, or my PMG is not producing. Their hub, you know, they've had a strike and their hub come loose, and now they're, and it looks like it's spinning, and it is spinning, but it's not turning the PMG. So all of it's doing is eating away at the shaft of the PMG, which is, you know, which will actually finally be catastrophic to the PMG, that it will destroy the PMG. So definitely, I mean, if you have a tower strike, number two, you want to check the blades, because if you've had a tower strike or any type of strike, if it becomes damaged and now the thing's not really spinning very fast and all of a sudden it starts spinning fast again and you've had some type of a strike, you take a chance like on anything, and it's like not having the lug nuts tire on your tire tightened down hard enough. Now you take a chance that things can come apart. And if a blade on a turbine comes apart, it could be very dangerous. I mean, it could be launched, you know, hundreds of yards, maybe farther, in a big wind. So it can be very dangerous to any people or animals or structures around. So.
Yeah, luckily most people are indoors when the big
winds
are around.
That's right. So yeah, definitely.
But yeah, one thing I'd like to add is about the balance blades. That is,
yeah.
It can take out, it can wear your bearings faster.
That's right. That's
and good. Then also it'll obviously affect your performance,
right,
too.
Right. But the bearing deal, like he just said, that's a big factor, because now you're putting weight on one side, so you've got a shaft that is put through a set of bearings, and on that back bearing, if you have something pulling it down harder on the front side, then every time it spins, it just wears on that back bearing until finally it wears that bearing out, causes too much heat, too much friction on that bearing, and then it'll cause the bearing to seize up, and then everything goes bad in the PMG again. So,
how often should somebody take their tower down, inspect? Obviously, the blades is a big component of that overall inspection, but you want to look at the PMG also, and of course, all the components of it. But, I mean, what we were looking at, once a season or a couple seasons or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, I would say once a year.
You know, just like Wyatt said, once a year. If you're in a low wind zone, once a year is fine. I mean, if you're in Montana, Wyoming, listening to us, I mean,
I would agree with that.
If you're having 50 and 60 mile an hour winds, you might want to take it down a little more often. You want to, you know, yeah. Because you've got some big winds out in that country, and you definitely want to keep everything running as smoothly and efficiently as possible. And it's no different than having maintenance on your car. If you want it to run to the top end performance, I mean, sometimes you have, you know, grease the yaw bearings. Make sure that yaw bearing is how it acclimates to the wind. I mean, it's just one of those factors. Make sure we recommend greasing the actual tower, you know, so when it turns, there's no metal rubbing there. So make sure that there's no little, you know, make sure that blade assembly is tight, that it's not actually spinning on that shaft. You know, there again, if it spins on that shaft, I mean, it can happen in one day. You can have a bad instance go, you know, if you know something struck that tower and you let it go more than a day and it spins on that shaft, you know, it's a big wind, it's, you know, it's a metal on metal, and it's just like anything else on metal, metal on metal. It's going to grind away.
Yeah, it's never a positive.
It's not going to be good.
One of the things that seems to come up, and you see a lot of, we'll just say it's politicized a big deal, are birds, bats, different things that get tied up in the towers. What do you guys see? What do you guys hear about from our clients? I know we've got how many turbines have we got running here? Six. I know there's the big one in the back.
Yeah, we've got five.
And we've got the ones up on the building. I don't know that I've ever seen anything to me that indicated
that there's been any evidence for us that showed that there's been a bat strike or a bird strike, either one. You know, statistically speaking, there's there's a lot more bird strikes on cell towers than there are on wind towers and wind generators. Bats work off of sonar. A bat can hear the wind turbine spinning. So if he flies into the wind turbine, he was a suicide bat. He didn't, you know, maybe there wasn't enough bugs in the area and he decided it wasn't worth it. But birds are the same way. I mean, if it's there would be instances where you maybe have a bird that was in panic mode trying to escape a predator bird, you know, raptor of some sort, and maybe they unintentionally fly into it. But for the most part, I mean, you got to understand the bird's eyesight versus the human eyesight. I mean, it's like the bloodhound smelling something that's 10 feet deep in concrete. And how do they do that? We don't understand. How does a bird see like they do? We don't know. I mean, but a bird sees things that we don't, I mean, can't even fathom seeing. So a bird to fly into it, there again, it's typically going to be more of a evasive maneuver trying to escape something else than it is just flying along and, oh my God, there's a, you know, as far as that goes, I mean, it's like airplanes.
Well, and I know one of the things that has come up, and Chris and I both love the birds. I mean, I guess really who doesn't? I mean, bird feeders and bird watching and Sibley catalogs and those type of things. And I've never seen anything here that indicated that you had any sort of real threat to a bird. And I know they talk about even, you know, birds that get on power lines that they, you know, get at a power pole and they they touch and that, you know, gets there. I've never really seen that either. Now, I'm sure it happens.
Right.
But I think from everything I've said and what you guys are telling me here, it seems like politicized.
It is. It's a political deal that
wind turbines are horrible. They're killing all the birds in the world, and that one in the back. I mean, I just if there was going to be anything that was going to
65-foot tower, you know, and it spins almost daily, you know, no matter what.
It would seem like if there was going to be something that would catch. And we've got. I don't know, are they soybean fields on either side or cornfields on either side? I mean, if there was going to be something that was like that, it would certainly be around that wind turbine. So,
some of them go up there and they'll perch on the tail or tail vane, you know. They're pretty comfortable around it.
Like we said, birds understand. I mean, they get it, you know. It's a simple fact that if they're getting a lot of times it's that they're trying to do something evasive to evade something, you know, is only the reason they, same way with the raptors that hit the big towers and the big wind turbines, you know, typically they are in chase of something, and so they're not focused on anything, so they wind up striking into that. But it's on a typical everyday basis that they're just out flying around. I mean, you got to think, this wind turbine's not on legs and it doesn't have arms and it's not swinging at anything. You know, there again, it's so minute. Happens so infrequently that it should never be an issue to even.
It's to sad and it's unfortunate, but it's not
right.
It's not a reality.
Right. The benefits that we gain from using wind and renewable energy pretty disproportionate. Yeah.
Well, what questions have I not asked about blades? What have I from my own ignorance here? I got two of the sharpest guys in the industry sitting here, and I'm wondering what I didn't ask that my podcasters are sitting out there going, hey, you didn't ask them.
Just as you're looking at wind turbines and you're choosing who to purchase from, Missouri Wind and Solar should be your choice. But when you're looking at that, I mean, you know, take into account what we've told you in this podcast, that we're using carbon fiber, that we're trying, you know, we're doing them here locally, we're doing them in the States, we're doing them in Missouri, you know, we're doing almost everything we do with our blades here in the States. You know, you get all of this taken into account, we're a company that definitely is trying to use the best material. We didn't go out and look at somebody else's blade and say we're going to knock that off. We designed our blade. We came up with what worked the best for our PMGs and our turbines. So
and I agree with you. One of the other things is while it is incredibly difficult, I mean we face this every day, it's incredibly difficult not to buy from China. I mean there's no way that we couldn't be in business and not buy from China. Or said another way, we could sell to three people who could afford to buy a turbine for $10,000. But the blades is one of the things that we've got a great company that stays on top of that. We're able to maintain quality control, and they drive them up here for us. And you know, we've got a lot of quality control that we can exercise over that. And the great thing, just like you're saying, is that makes us. It's our blades on our.
We've designed it for our PMGs.
Our PMGs.
We've designed it for our, you know. So if somebody's wanting to use those, not to say that they can't be used on a plethora of other applications, but as it stands, you know, when you buy our PMG with our blades, they are one. I mean, they're well matched. They're one and two.
That just kind of makes a statement. Those other companies haven't made the investment in the research and development and trying to source their products like we have. So
most of the other companies, and just to throw this out, most of the other companies don't have the guy to my left, Wyatt, you know, who is every day perfecting the art of what we do at this facility. I mean, he takes every product and he scrutinizes that to make sure that everything that we do
maybe it's
shave a little off here and add a little to the other side, or maybe it's, you know, change that programming by one or two points on the voltage, you know, and it makes a huge difference. And that's why though Missouri Wind and Solar's here to stay. I mean, because we do that on an everyday basis. I mean, it's something we do.
And one of the things I'd add too, all of our clients, committed clients. I mean, we have a great client base. I mean, there's just no doubt about that.
Right.
You guys out there listening to us, if you know of people where we could source stuff in the U.S., email us. Email sales@mwands.com. Let us know. I mean, we would love to source as much as we can here in the States. I mean, it's a challenge finding people to source. I mean, that's part of the problem is just finding them. You'd think today in the world of internet, you could Google a part or something, and it's never that simple.
That's right. One little tidbit for you, or one little deal. What do you call a massive solar spill?
It's a beautiful day.
A nice day.
Well, as always, thank you for taking the time to tune into our podcast. We'll keep bringing these to you if you keep buying our products. Check us out at mwands.com. If you need more education, check us out on YouTube. I think I said earlier in the podcast, I think Wyatt and Crystal are going to go try to destroy some blades and have fun. I wouldn't mind trying to go shoot one just to see what happens from afar. But
that'd be cool.
Join us back next week. We'll have another podcast for you. And as always, thanks for joining us.